what we tell ourselves is very powerful. So if we wake up every morning and we tell ourselves that it's going to be a bad day, I'm going to do poorly at this, I'm not going to do well at this or at my job, those things are going to manifest as true. If we wake up in the morning and we tell ourselves mantras like something as simple as I'm smart, I'm capable, I'm kind, like my mantra, I create a safe space for people to be their authentic self. It trains our brain to see the positive as well as the pinnacle of our higher selves.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Caprellian, and I'm joined by my co-host, sister, and talent management pro, Alexandra Caprellian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence.
Our guest for this episode is Rihanna Vaughn, a prior service Marine and supply officer. She will tell us how Commit Foundation helped her transition, the power of a mantra and how it helped her refocus on her values, what drew her to the financial service industry, why she is pivoting to counseling, and much more. Stay tuned because her final thoughts at the end of the episode are pure gold.
Rihanna Vaughn, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Yeah, excited to have you on. And we also have a history of working together too. So, you know, it's certainly interesting to kind of hear your perspective on how you were working on your transition, which was largely a private thing while we worked on more the business side. So, we've had some great phone conversations. I'm glad we're able to share your story with the rest of the audience. Rihanna, if you could just give everybody an idea of where you grew up, how you got into the Marine Corps, and your duty station assignments leading up to your last duty station.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So I was born and raised in California. Went to school, you know, all the way up into high school in Southern California. I started swimming when I was 8. And my family always reminds me that, like, I was watching the Olympics and pointed to the screen, and I was like, I want to do that. And my mom was like, oh, you want to swim? And I said, no, I want to swim at the Olympics. So you can say I've always been a bit ambitious. In high school, I was recruited by a bunch of schools in my junior and senior year, and I eventually chose the Naval Academy. My mom makes fun of me because I made, like, a pro and cons list for all the schools. Yeah, very... very pro and con list. I swam for Navy all 4 years. Around your junior year, you start to decide, do you want to go Navy? Do you want to go Marine Corps? Do you want to go subs? And so I chose the Marine Corps for a few different reasons. I had a lot of women in my network, both officers that worked there, enlisted personnel that worked there, and then friends who I'd either swam with or been friends with at the Naval Academy who had chose Marine Corps. And so I felt like I had some of those similar values that my friends and those mentors had. So I chose to go Marine Corps my senior year. The Marine Corps spoke to me because of the slogan, the few, the proud, and I really wanted to be part of the best. I think that's why I chose Navy over all the other schools and also for the adventure. I also, you know, no offense to the other branches, but I think the Marine Corps is a special place and I wanted to be part of the best. And also I didn't want to be part of it. I didn't want to be on a ship, which is funny because then when you get in the Marine Corps, you find out that, you know, if you're going to go on a MEU, you're going to be on a ship. But at that point in my career, I didn't really know that. So
what did being part of a swimming team teach you, or what kind of things did you learn from that experience that helped you throughout your career?
Swimming is a unique sport. It's very challenging. It's one of those sports where that is the only sport you do, right? Like there's some people that play summer and spring sports and they can kind of split their time between the two. Swimming is a year-round sport. I think that swimming really taught me resilience. It taught me how to fail. And I think the best part of like teaching a young person to fail is that you just get back up and you try again. And it also taught me dedication and commitment. And I think all of those things have a place in the military, especially the Marine Corps.
Well, I can agree with the really hard part because I'm not a swimmer and like five laps and I'm done. I'm like toast. And I run and it's a different thing. Like I like running. I do a lot of long distance running. I'm not an ultra runner, but I'm a long distance runner. And there's just something about being in the water where, man, that just will sap the energy. It's tough. It's a tough sport.
That's really funny that you say that because I can't stand running. So,
well, you know, some were meant for land and some were meant for water. And I know where my place is at. That's for sure.
Oh, I can't stand running. So I am with you.
So after you graduated from the Naval Academy, what happened there? What happened afterwards?
So after I graduated the Naval Academy, I took about a month before I went to TPS. And TPS is the basic school where everyone learns to be a provisional rifle platoon commander. So while I was at TPS, I was there through the winter of 2014 into 2015. Right before finishing TBS, I received the MOS of a supply officer and received my first duty station, which was going to be Combat Logistics Battalion 1 in Camp Pendleton, California. And so while I was at CLB 1, I was the battalion supply officer that year from about October 2015 till June of 2018 when I received PCS orders.
Did you want to be a supply officer?
I did. That was my number one choice. And I
need to know why. Why was that your number one choice?
I chose to be a supply officer because it was between supply and logistics. At TBS, they do a MOS night where you get to speak to all different types of officers. I spoke to the LAGO and I talked to the SUPO. And what really drew me to supply was that supply officers do both logistics and supply. And I really liked the fact that most supply officers in the Marine Corps work directly for the commanding officer. And that was just interesting to me, being able to work directly for your battalion or your regimental commanding officer.
Yeah, and it's also a tremendous amount of responsibility for a young officer just getting into the Marine Corps too, right? Because you're responsible for the property account, among all other things too, that apply, that have dollar sign attached to it.
Yes, I agree. It is a lot of responsibility. When I showed up to my first unit, it was a steep learning curve. I had a very good XO at the time. Our battalion commander was actually deployed and our XO was working as the battalion commander. And he was very hard on me, but I attribute everything I learned about being a good supply officer from the XO that I had at that time.
That's great. And I think that's good leadership. That's being the beneficiary of sometimes good leadership, tough leadership, but good leadership. What happened after you were at CLB-1? Where'd you go to after that?
So after CLB-1, I wanted orders on the East Coast. And so the monitor was like, hey, we're standing up this unit. And at the time, I had no idea what standing up a unit meant. But she was like, we're standing up this unit. It's akin to a regimental SUPO billet, which for a supply officer is really kind of that like natural progression. And she was like, we're standing up this MWSG-27 and they need a supply officer. And I was like, sure, why not? So I got orders to MWSG-27 Cherry Point. And I was the support group supply officer from about July 2018 till October 2020 when I decided to leave the Marine Corps.
Okay, Marine Wing Support Group. And that's where I think I met you. I got assigned there probably a year after you had already been there. Is that correct?
I believe so. Yeah. We worked together for about a year, I think.
Yeah. The latter year before they deactivated us again.
It was so funny. I was like, I was here for stand-up. I'm here for sundown.
Yeah, that was an emotional event for me because like you, I was told by the monitor, Marine Wing Support Group standing up. And I'm like, oh, I'm good at that. I understand that. I can help that unit. And then you get there and 6 months later, they're like, yeah, we're shutting you down. No, that can't be right. I went through like the eight phases of denial, or maybe eight phases of grief, and denial was one of them. And I stayed at denial for a long period of time. So, yeah, but that was also at a time where we were in the height of COVID too. So I know that that was your last duty station. Talk to us a little bit about when you made the mental decision to transition, particularly around that time.
So when I was at the Naval Academy and I graduated, I was never that person that was like, I'm doing 20, I'm a hard charger. Like that's, you know, I'm not going to be, I was like, I'm a five and diver. If you don't know what that is, it means you do your five and you get out. After my first unit, I said, let's try one more. We'll see how it goes. Because I won't lie, CLB-1 was a tough billet. We worked very long hours and we did a lot of stuff when I was there. So I show up at MWSG 27, and I had an amazing boss at the time who let me do a bunch of stuff, to include McQuiss. And then he also let me go to this seminar called OWLS, Officer Women Leadership Seminar, where I met a lot of badass women, one of which was General Reynolds. And when I tell you, like, starstruck, I'm obsessed with her. But I learned a lot at that seminar and met a lot of really cool women across the services, both enlisted and officer, at the Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard. And I came back and I told him, I was like, I'm in this for the long haul. I was like, I'm going to be Colonel Vaughn. That's my path. And that was in 2019. Over the course of the next year, I was really interested in branching out of supply. I love supply, but I wanted more opportunities to challenge me. And I really, really, really wanted to be in a leadership position like a company commander. But for a supply officer, those are really few and far between. I fought for other types of opportunities to challenge me, but unfortunately, they weren't afforded to me. It's difficult as a supply officer because we are one of one. And when you take a supply officer out of her billet, you're gapped a pretty important officer position. So I felt a little stuck and undervalued. So in February of 2020, I dropped my papers and officially decided to EAS.
February of 2020 gave you how much time to prepare for your exit?
I got out in June of 2020, so a couple of months. But in all fairness, mentally, I had been preparing probably since October of 2019.
So when you made that decision, like, what were your next steps? What was your game plan?
The first step was really coming to terms mentally for me, because like I stated earlier, I really love the Marine Corps, and I saw two paths for me. And so picking the path of getting out, there was a little bit of a grieving process of shedding that uniform and shedding that identity. So that was probably the first step, which was the mental prep. Like, you are going to be getting out, and what does that look like? I think the second step for me was identifying what I wanted when I got out. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Commit Foundation, but they work with high-performing senior enlisted and officers as they prep to get out of the military. And so I was connected with a coach who really helped me identify some of my values. What did I want when I got out? What was the goal of it all? Also, through this entire process, talking with my friends and my family and my mentors, I have a select group of people who I really, really value their opinions and people who give me honest advice. I was told one time to get a very small sticky note, like the 1x1 sticky note, and write down the names of people whose advice matters to you, and then ignore everybody else's. And it's honestly been one of the greatest pieces of advice I've ever had. And then I think the last step was I jumped. I had the courage to be like, I don't know what's on the other side, but we're just going for it.
This is the first time anybody's mentioned the Commit Foundation. I'm going to have to definitely look into that. I'm sure they have a website. So if they do, I'll put it in the episode notes.
Yes, please do. I cannot say greater things about the Commit Foundation. The coach that I worked with, her name's Nikki. She was also a Naval Academy grad. And we did a lot of work around what did I do when I was in? What did I like that I did when I was in? What did I want my working environment to look like? What did I want my, we really stayed away from like income and all those like tangibles. It was more so like building a work environment outside of the Marine Corps that worked for me and my values. So yes, cannot recommend Commit more.
So when you figured out what it was that you wanted to do, or at least narrowed down what your vision was, what your values were, and what your goal was, how did you get from there to going into financial services?
So when I started working with Nikki at Commit, she had me do some exercises, and one of those kind of landed in my lap. I had a friend who I swam with at Navy who was working with a financial advisor in the financial services industry, and she connected the both of us. We were kind of in the hiring process, and then she just went dark on me. I was like, where'd she go? I don't know. So I went on LinkedIn and I was like, I'm just going to look for financial jobs and just see what I find. So I was on LinkedIn. I applied through the LinkedIn portal to a few different jobs. And I ended up interviewing with a company who eventually offered me a job to start in October 2020. For me, through the coaching process, I figured that when I was a supply officer, I really didn't want to do supply as a civilian. Again, like I stated earlier, I was more so, I like leadership. That was big for me. Supply was really just the MOS. And also, I just thought, if I'm going to do supply, why wouldn't I just stay in the Marine Corps? But as a supply officer, we deal with money, we deal with budgets, we deal with, I also had a collateral billet as a command financial specialist. So I was already helping young Marines and, you know, senior Marines. I was holding classes on how to budget, how to work your TSP, what funds should your TSP be going in. And so I saw that as a larger scale in the financial services industry. When they offered me the position, I was a little nervous because it was a 100% commission job. And that can be scary. The Marine Corps, you get your paycheck every 2 weeks. You know how much money you make. You know when you're going to make more money. And so a 100% commission job was daunting. But I told myself when I was transitioning to not make decisions in fear, but to make decisions in my values. And so I accepted the job and started training in October of 2020.
We don't need to go into too much detail, but generally speaking, what is the financial services industry like? I mean, when we say that, what does that mean?
So the financial services industry, that's a really large umbrella term. I specifically was kind of in the financial representative side, so more sales. And during the training, we learned, we did a lot of that client acquisition. We do a project where you go through all your connections and you find out who you're going to reach out to. We also practiced cold calling. It's really not cold calling because you're supposed to know these people, but we work on scripts on how to talk to people. We learn about the products that we deliver, how to deliver those products, and things like that. It's a 3-week course, and I learned a lot. I really got over that fear of calling people I don't know. I encourage people, if they really want to learn about themselves, to go do a sales job for a couple of months. You will learn a lot about yourself.
That, and you, if you lived in a shell or were in a quote unquote shell, you're going to break out of it pretty quickly, right?
Very much so, yes. You learn that, one, you're more capable than you think, and the fear aspect of calling somebody you don't know, getting over that fear for the best interest of them. I truly believe, and we can go over this more, I truly believe that everyone needs a financial plan, and that's really at the end of the day, like what we're trying to help people with.
Thank you for a description of what financial services mean, because I didn't know. But I know also that that's not something that, based on our prior conversation, it's not what you want to do long term. As a matter of fact, you're in the middle of doing another pivot. So tell us and the listeners what that pivot is and why you're making it.
Yes, I am currently what I like to call a career changer. a three-time career changer. As much as I believe everyone needs a financial plan, I thoroughly believe that with my entire heart. I've seen my own clients and the clients of the veteran that I currently work for thrive with good financial plans. I was not passionate about the material, if that makes sense. Money really isn't exciting for me, and I knew I wasn't doing myself or my clients a service by staying in something I wasn't passionate about. So right now I do work in a part-time capacity for a veteran. He's a crypto guy in the Navy. He runs a thriving practice in Virginia Beach. And as a team, we do help a lot of, we serve a lot of veterans in active duty with financial plans.
So if you're doing that part-time, what's the other time involving?
The rest of my week is filled with grad school. So my third career transition happened in about the middle of COVID. I was living by myself in Bethesda, Maryland, and like a lot of people during this time, I was having a hard time with how my personal values were aligning with my job, not really talking to anybody, being very isolated. I lived alone. And although I believe financial planning is necessary for all people, I just wasn't finding that I was aligning with the work. And that was creating a lot of tension within myself. During that time, I am a part of this group on Facebook for Service Academy women graduates. And I connected with an Air Force grad who ran her own coaching practice. And so I connected with her. There was about four or five female veterans that met weekly. We did some work beforehand, and then we came together as a group, and we worked through a lot of things. And during that time, it was about like an eight-week seminar group work. I did a lot of reflection on why I loved being a Marine officer. Some of those things included the leadership aspect. I was really passionate about helping the young men and women like believe in themselves and accomplish things while they were service members. And I was also a sexual assault prevention and response victim advocate. And so through this process of working with the Air Force grad and her coaching practice, I created this mantra for myself that I create a safe place for people to be their authentic self. And that helped a lot of things click into place for me.
I think that it's great for you to use a mantra. I started using one, or using actually several that I have on stickies on my mirror. But maybe for those that don't understand like the power of a mantra, how has that actually helped you?
I believe the power of mantras comes from what we tell ourselves is very powerful. So if we wake up every morning and we tell ourselves that it's going to be a bad day, I'm going to do poorly at this, I'm not going to do well at this or at my job, those things are going to manifest as true. If we wake up in the morning and we tell ourselves mantras like something as simple as I'm smart, I'm capable, I'm kind, like my mantra, I create a safe space for people to be their authentic self. It trains our brain to see the positive as well as the pinnacle of our higher selves. And so that's what I think the power of a mantra is.
It falls in line with the law of attraction, right? If you say negative things, you think negative things happen. If you say positive things, you think positive things, you act positively, positive things happen. I know that I'm glad that the mantra is working for you. I know it works for me. And I think that's a great TTP for anybody that's trying, once they lock on to what it is that drives them, put it right in front of you every day. Even say it out loud. And I say it just before I brush my teeth because I've got it on a sticky note in my bathroom. I've got four of them. I had my daughter make three. And that actually, here's a crazy thing. It even works for kids because when I see my daughter getting ready to do something, I actually hear her mumbling the mantras to herself like when she's getting ready to climb a big obstacle. So the power of mantras is great. I'm glad that you mentioned that because I'm glad it also benefited you. So what does the future look like for you? What are your future plans?
So future plans for me right now, I'm in the middle of grad school. I graduate grad school this December. I will have a master's in education in school counseling. Past that, I'm not 100% sure. There are a couple of paths that I can choose. For the state of Maryland, you have to have a master's degree in school counseling in order to work in schools. And you also have to pass the CPCE, which is the basically the standardized test to become a school counselor. So that is one path for me. Because I was a victim advocate in the Marine Corps, I have a strong affinity to help women who are survivors of sexual assault through a counseling lens. And so right now I'm debating whether I want to go into school counseling or if I want to take the national counselor exam and go straight into earning clinical hours towards that. I would really love to work with survivors of domestic violence and intimate partner violence and their children. So there's a few different things that I'm working through right now.
Do you have a mentor that you're going to that maybe can inform you on some of that stuff, like the intricacies of pursuing either of those paths?
Yes. So right now my grad program is through Loyola University of Maryland. And I cannot speak highly enough of the professors that work there. So I have a few mentors through Loyola, as well as through this program, we have to do 700 hours of interning at local schools. So I did a 100-hour practicum at an elementary school. I'm currently in a 300-hour internship in a middle school. And next semester, I will be in a 300-hour internship, hopefully, at a high school. I haven't gotten that assignment yet. And so through that, we also are working with school counselors who work in the schools. And I've met a few really great people through that program that I consider mentors. Also through the program and through the classes that we take, there's a lot of guest lecturers and people that come and talk to us for a couple hours of what they do. And so I have met some great people through that as well, that hopefully I can leverage their expertise further along down the line.
I have a quick question, and kind of going back to what you were talking about when you were with your coach in the Commit Foundation. You mentioned when you were going through all of the questions and envisioning what you were wanting to do outside of the military, one of the things that you were trying to put together was what you wanted your work environment to look like. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was that you were looking for in your work environment?
So thinking back, it's really funny because work from home wasn't a thing, right? Nobody was like, oh, I want to work from home. And if I were to go back to that moment and know what I know now, I definitely would have said I want some portion of my work environment to be a work from home type situation. But at that point, all I knew was really not even a 9-to-5, right? Like in the military, I think my first unit, I was there like 0-5, and sometimes I didn't leave till 1900 at night. And, you know, Marines are Marines 24/7. So sometimes I was doing work, you know, late into the night, depending on, you know, if my Marines needed me. And so at that point, I feel like 9-to-5 was just kind of, yeah, 9-to-5 sounds great. But definitely now, since I've worked in a, you know, civilian private sector building, I've worked from home, I've now worked within the school system. I think for me, the perfect balance is sometimes being able to work from home, sometimes being in the place where I work. I'm an introvert, so I do really love my time alone. But I did find when I worked 100% from home, I really miss that human connection of, you know, sometimes that workplace gossip, but also making friends and hearing about people's days and that just the human interaction, right? Like giving a hug to your work bestie and things like that. The gentleman I work for right now, Ken Kreisman, he had me down in Virginia Beach doing some training. And I totally missed that. I was like, oh, I love mentoring. I love being in the room with people when I'm talking to them. So for me, it's a balance. I do really love working from home and also going into the office. But I do know some people who 100%, they love working from home. They don't want to see a single person. And then, you know, the people who are like, I want to be in the office all the time. I'm a social butterfly. That's how I get things done. So, you know, my advice to people would be try things out and feel out what you like, because sometimes you might really like that working from home environment because you have kids and it lets you cut out that commute time. So that would be my advice to people, is just try stuff out, be open to the process.
Yeah, I can feel you on that one. I was working full time in the office, and then COVID hit, and then we all went working from home, and which was, you know, great, because then you can have your own schedule. You can go to stores if you need to in between meeting times and still make it on time and do your work. But now that we're in this hybrid model where you can go into the office if you want, or you can work from home if you want, depending on the role, it's been great. So I literally just rushed home from the office because I go in just every Thursday. So it's been really nice to have that flexibility. One other question that I had for you, you were describing some of the similarities from what you were doing in the military, and please forgive me, I'm blanking on what role it was that you were doing, but it had a lot of financial background and responsibility. What were the biggest learning curves that you had from doing what you were doing in the military and then doing it in the financial services now?
So when I was in the military, I think you're referencing the Command Financial Specialist, CFS.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes. I really enjoyed helping. It was mainly young Marines understand how much money they were making, the percentages of really what you should be saving every month, right? Like, don't blow your whole paycheck on Red Bulls and cigarettes. And also understanding the TSP and how, you know, like when you're putting your money, it goes there every month. Where is it going? What does a fund actually mean? And then also at that same time, I think it was 2015 or 2016, the military changed from the legacy retirement system to blended system. And there was a lot of training that needed to be done. So I was helping in that. I think I thought that there was going to be a more parallel between that and the civilian side of financial planning. Mm-hmm. And the civilian side is a lot more complicated. There's products, there's different, you know, individual retirement accounts. There's just more information. The CFS role definitely gave me a leg up, I think, for most. But the position that I was in, the financial representative position that I was in, had a lot of career changers. In my class, there was another military person, some teachers, people from the food services industry. So it was built for career changers. And so a lot of that was taught to us. I think my biggest challenge was client services. It can be very challenging being rejected, setting meetings and people don't show up, setting meetings, having those meetings, and then being told, we don't want that, but you just sunk, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours into the planning process, right? So those were kind of the challenges, the people challenges that people really don't tell you about sales, that were the most challenging for me.
Yeah, I can only imagine the amount of people and the types of people that you would come in contact with, and you're just like, wow, you're a new breed of person. Thank you for introducing yourself to me in this way.
But I think it's also exciting that you kind of found your new, found a new mission, right?
I did.
And it took a little time to figure that out too. And that's, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So you've given us a lot of your time, and I appreciate the transparency and making yourself vulnerable. It's a lot of great information. Before we wrap up, are there like two or three things that you want the listeners to remember, particularly those that are preparing for their own transition?
Yes, I do. I have three. Number one, try not to overthink it. I tell people all the time, the military, there's a finite amount of opportunity, right? You have a path. I'm sure it's the same for you, right? You were an OPSO. There's this natural path that you're expected to follow. You have some choice, but not a lot. As a civilian, there's infinite amount of possibilities. You can get out and do really whatever you want. And so you just have the courage, you just have to have the courage to jump into the unknown. I think my second piece would be to really build intentional relationships along the throughout the transition journey, but also just throughout life. I think that is, if I could just bold, underline, asterisk, anything, it is build intentional relationships. Through the transition process and beyond, I have met so many people that I've created friendships with, helped me transition, female veterans, just building a coalition of people. And for me, it was women on my team that held me accountable, had my back, cared for me on those hard days when you don't believe in yourself or you're afraid and you really don't want to take that next step. And also just to encourage you to go for your dreams. I cannot emphasize building those relationships enough. And then I think my third would just be embrace the fear, face it head on. To steal from Glennon Doyle, you can do hard things. You've done them in the military, and transition is just another step, right? Whether you do 5 years or 20 years, at some point you are going to become a civilian again. And so just embrace it. It's a journey, and everything will be okay.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to write those down. I'm going to put those on stickies. So that's really good. No, I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And we've asked some questions, but I'm sure there are questions that we missed, particularly for those that are thinking about following the same path, whether it's into the financial services and some of the things that you've learned, or maybe going into the path of counseling, how to essentially bifurcate covering down on the financial aspect, i.e. doing part-time work and then trying to do grad work at the same time. If listeners want to ask you a question, something we'd into, or ask other amplifying questions, how can they get in touch with you? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so they can find me on LinkedIn. I'm always on LinkedIn, at Rihanna Vaughn. And then I can give you my email, Chris, and you can put the email in the podcast notes, and so people can feel free to email me as well. I know that we didn't talk about some of the things like the GI Bill. I would love to talk to listeners about that process and where to get like the best information.
All right. That's great. Well, I'll make sure I put that in the episode notes. And I want to thank you again for taking the time to come onto this podcast and share your story, because I promise there's somebody out there that's listening that's going to take a lot away from this, and it's going to help them. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Thanks, Alexandra. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to let you go, but I'll definitely be in touch.
Have a good day.
All right. And Rihanna has left our virtual studio. That was great.
That was
great. And getting the woman's perspective of, you know, the transition process. I think that's awesome. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the process that she went through and able to bring us through it. What I really just truly enjoyed are those little nuggets of sayings that she had. She had one that said, trust the process, which is, you know, very standard. We all love it. But you have to keep saying it to yourself, like those mantras. And the last one that she said was embrace the fear. And I know a lot of people are so fearful of making that big leap into something new and unknown. And it's hard to do. And it's hard to do confidently. But like she said, you have done so many hard things in the military. You can do this as well. So embrace the fear. Loved it.
Yeah, that's great. I also am very thankful that she mentioned a resource that I wasn't even familiar with. What is it? Commit Foundation. Mm-hmm. They're actually at commitfoundation.org. And on their website, they have a mission. It says, Commit Foundation empowers service members, veterans, and their families through personalized programs, resources, and the support of our community to create purposeful and fulfilling transitions. Sounds like a great resource. I'm going to look more into this, and I'm definitely going to put the website in the episode notes if you want to check it out. And this wraps up another great conversation. Thank you very much for listening to us. If you like what you heard, you can support our podcast by giving us a 5-star review. 5 stars. Why would you give us 1 star? I'm kidding. You can give us whatever it is you think we rate, but certainly also looking for your feedback. So if you have feedback to give, you can email us at newmissionct@gmail.com. You can also follow the New Mission Career Transition podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and other podcast apps. You can DM us too on our Instagram account at newmissionct. That's New Mission Charlie Tango. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. If you are preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.